Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mundane Festival podcast. I'm your host, Chris Lamberth. Today is Sunday, March 5th, 2017. Remember, as always, you can subscribe to the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and on Podbean, the host site. If you like this show, please rate and review it on iTunes and or Stitcher. Give it a 5-star review. Let everyone know why you like it, because it will make me feel good about myself and most of the life decisions that I've made so far. Not unlike the decision I made to go to the grocery store on a Sunday afternoon, which is peak grocery store hours, where everybody's trying to get their shit together for Sunday because they got to go to work on Monday. And it's just a shit ton of people all over the place not knowing. Well, I think they know where they're going to a certain degree, but there's just no decorum at all. People will run over you. It's just so crowded. And if I would have gotten my lazy ass up a lot earlier, I'd have been better off. But I managed. One thing I don't like is when you go to the checkout, and you go to the self-checkout thing, they're like the people that are like supposed to be working those, where they're just kind of watching everybody. Like they know, they see you if you make a mistake, or if you have to, you need their assistance because you have too many items on the thing. Like they have to put in. It's just annoying, and it's just like if you're gonna have all these self-checkout things, kiosks, have somebody there to assist you when you need it. That's all I gotta say. And then I was at Stop and Shop, and I said, I was talking to my parents before I went into the store, and they were talking about spaghetti. And I was like, oh, that's a good idea. I should make some spaghetti this week. Maybe I won't make it today, but what I think I'm gonna do is prep my vegetables to go into my sauce. And then when I get home tomorrow, all I have to do is just like heat the sauce up and throw the vegetables in. So I'm probably going to do that after I upload this podcast, so you can give you a little behind the curtain stuff, you know. So I went to Whole Foods, and Whole Foods, that is even worse. There's so many people there. It's just crowded. And I like the meatballs at Whole Foods. They make like these Parmesan meatballs, and they're amazing. So I got some of those, and I'm going to add that to my sauce or to my gravy if you're Italian, right? Is that what you guys? So I'm going to do that. So I'm excited about that. But I should have just got my ass up early, started my day early. I always regret that when I leave my place later than I should have. All right. You can like the show on Facebook. You can follow it on Twitter at Mundane Festival, and you can follow me, your host, the guy talking to you right now, on Twitter at Chris Lamberth. You can also email the show at mundanefestivalpod@gmail.com. This is episode 209. I have a very special guest, comedian, actor, father, Al Jackson, out of LA, from Cleveland, based in LA now. And we had a really great conversation that I'm going to share with you in a few. I just got to tell you a little bit about my week. Comedy was very interesting this week. I had so Wednesday, I'm getting ready to leave work. I get a text message from my manager. He says, "Hey Chris, are you available to open for Ted Alexandro in Albany?" And I was like, "Fuck yeah, I love Ted." And then as soon as I could finish writing that back to him, he's like, "Oh, it's been filled. They filled it with a local comic." And I was like, "Fuck." And he said, "Well, I got a gig for you. Can you do this gig in Boonville, New York, outside of Utica?" And I was like, "Well, that's probably," I looked it up on my Google map, and that was 3 hours from my job. So I get off of work at 3, and I'm thinking, I was like, "Okay, I can make that show. I can make that show." And it's for a little bit of money, no hotel. I would have to get, I was like, "You know what? I need to do comedy. I'm a comedian who needs to do comedy, and I love doing comedy on the road. I love upstate New York. Let's do it." Part of me was feeling kind of like, damn it, I really wanted to work with Ted And plus, if I would have worked with Ted, he's an awesome comic. He's been on the show. But if I worked with Ted in Saratoga Springs, I would have gotten to go to Hattie's, which is like a soul food Southern cuisine place in Saratoga, New York. So I would have been able to do that. I was a little disappointed, but I was like, all right, I'm doing a gig, and doing a gig Friday night. What's better than doing stand-up comedy on a Friday night? And so this place was at an Elks Lodge. So Friday gets here, and supposed to do the gig with comedian Mike Spears. Very funny dude. Worked with him a bunch of times. And he said, hey, Chris, we're both on this gig. Why don't you just meet me in Albany, and we'll go up together. We'll do the other 2 hours. It's like 4 hours away, 2 hours from Albany. I was like, all right. So I'm driving, and all of a sudden I get, like, I'm driving up 87 going north to Albany, and I see where my Google Maps is like, oh, there's a delay. So you're going to get there at 5:40. And I said, okay, this isn't going to work out. I'm not going to be able to meet Mike at 5:15 like we discussed. So I was like, all right. Mike called him up. He's like, yeah, you should just go on your own, and I'll meet you up there. I'm like, all right, bet. So I'm driving up there, and it starts to snow. And I'm like, holy shit, it's fucking snowing. And then it stops snowing. And I'm like, all right, so I'm going to make the show. I'm gonna get there at 7:30. Like, I'm going to be there in time for the show that's at 8. So I'm driving, and I see where I missed my exit. And it was supposed to be exit 31. I missed exit 31. I probably, most likely because I was navel-gazing at my stand-up. I was trying to see if I could do stand-up again. I was thinking about, because I haven't done a set in like a week at the time. And I'm listening to my set. And I was like, fuck, I missed my turn. I was like, okay, I'll just get the next exit and go. And the next exit didn't come till like another 20 minutes. And I said, okay, I'm still going to be in time. And I'm driving. I make my exit where I'm supposed to. I'm turning around. And I'm like, I'm driving. And I'm like, driving. And I notice, like, it's snowing off and on. And I'm like, okay, this isn't good. Like, this snow, this is really weird. This is upstate New York. I had never been up that far north before. And so I'm past Utica trying to make it to Boonville. And Utica's like it's like the 10th largest city in New York State. And I'm past that. So I notice I'm in this town called, village called Whitesboro. And Whitesboro, New York is a small town. It made the news a few years back when I think they did a segment about it on the Daily Show, where their village sign is a picture of a white guy choking the shit out of a Native American, and I guess eventually they're supposed to change it. I mean, as of like January of last year, they say they're going to change it. And yeah, the New York Times says the emblem seems to show a white man throttling a Native American as he falls to the ground in agony. Local leaders have defended the seal, pointing to its historical accuracy, even as criticism and derision mounted. There was something else, like where it used to be called another town. It used to be called something else. Fuck, and I thought I had this queued up. But it used to be called something else that was Native American-y, and then they just changed it after that guy choked the shit out of the Native American guy. So keep that in mind. I'm driving, and I'm driving along. I'll be like 15 minutes away, or like 15 miles away. So I'm close by. And I'm trying to go up this little hill. I have a Ford Fusion, and it's not going up the hill. And I'm like, what's going on? I can't go up this little tiny hill. My car is getting stuck. And so I just, like, after like 10 or 15 minutes of trying to maneuver this, I was like, fuck, if I don't get out of this, like, there's these two little ravines on the side where if I would have slipped, my car would have been stuck. And it would have been like, maybe not turned over, but it would have just been stuck in that fucking little valley. So after about 15 minutes, okay, I'm getting out of that. I'm turning around. I'm just maneuvering around. And I go for another 10 or 15 minutes, and I'm going up another hill where it's not even that not even that steep. My car still, it won't go. And I see that I'm next to a house where there's the guy's got his truck running. Some guy's got his truck running and there's a light on. He sees me struggling, doesn't do anything. And this is where I'm just like, okay, I don't want to ask anybody for help because I could easily go to ask somebody for help. I'm a big black guy in a fucking hoodie and I could get shot just trying to get help to get my car. I was like, fuck that. I'm not going to do that. I backed up, turned around again. So I got stuck twice. That's the second time. I'm driving down and I get a call from Mike and I'm telling him, hey man, you're probably going to have to start the show because I'm getting stuck in the snow. And he's like, where are you? I was like, I'm in like on Route 46. He's like, why the fuck are you up there? You should have just turned. I was like, I know I missed a turn. I'm sorry. You're going to have to start the show. I'll get there as soon as I can. I just don't want to die. He's like, get here in one piece. Don't worry about it. And I'm driving and I'm going down. I'm driving and it's just like my car is on skates. It's like there's no fucking traction with this car. Like it's just like, it's almost like it's a piece of shit. Like I'm just like, what the fuck? Like, and my car's on skate. So I like maneuver it and I'm good. I'm just like, fuck. And I'm just like, I'm just like, I don't want to miss this gig. I'm not missing this fucking gig. And it's just like, I'm just determined to not miss this show, but I still want to be, I want to be safe. But then like my ego's like, you're not missing a show. I'm trying to brave these fucking elements. And I was just like, ugh. So I make it around the corner and I make that and I'm driving. And I see where my GPS is trying to get me to go up this really fucking steep hill. And I'm not doing that. So I was like, God, just get me there. So it's just like 10 minutes away. So the Google Maps is saying you're 10 minutes away. And I get there. I get to like a 5-minute point and there's like a fork in the road. And I made the wrong turn and it's saying dead end. And then when I try to back up, my car gets stuck. And it says, like, you're literally 5 minutes away. And I was like, fuck. And I just keep, like, adjusting my car, like, moving it in, like, from neutral to drive to the I'm just getting it out. I back out. I'm good. And I'm like, I don't want to die in Whitesboro. I don't want to call for help in a place called Whitesboro, New York. I'm just like, I'm not going to end my life here. I'm not going to die here. And I was just like cursing. I was like, fuck. And I get out of the car. I'm just like seeing what I can do, try to push the car. And I just said, just get me out of here. So I eventually just like maneuvered the car, got out, and I drove and I finally got to the place. And I was just like, thank God. Like, I was just like, it was like I was stuck in a Robert Frost poem. And it was just like, oh my God, all this for, I'm not telling you for the amount of money, but I was like, I'm not ruining my car and my life for, this is like for the love of the game. This is like, all right, I can't die over this. So I get there and when I go down, I see Mike's already doing the show. He's killing and they see me and they cheer. They're like, oh, Chris isn't dead. And he's like, wait till you see how much you get paid. And they joked about that. And he brings me up and I just like riffed for a few minutes about like not wanting to die in Whitesboro, New York. And this was like an all white crowd at an Elks Lodge in this town, like outside of Utica. And it's like this area on Oneida County. I hope I'm saying it right. It's maybe like 50 miles east of Syracuse. So it was a harrowing experience. It just made me I was so lucky. Like there, that's just one of those, like there before the grace of God go I, because it's funny how like my Ford Fusion, there was some car, like some guy in a Subaru or something that just looked at me like they didn't give a fuck. They just looked at me when I was on that first hill and they just drove up the hill like it was nothing. There was another snowplower, this big truck, that just waited till I got the fuck out of the way and just passed me. Nobody gives a shit about you. This was in the middle. This was literally in the middle of nowhere. And it looked like if there were houses that were around, they just looked like they were unoccupied. And even if they were occupied, I probably would not be welcome there. That's like, that just puts shit into perspective. But, and I'm, And I was just like, man, so I get on stage and I did a half hour, closed out the show, and it ended up being fine. Like they didn't go for one guy. I've been opening with Trump stuff, not like really. Lately I've been talking about stuff, and I was like, oh, how are you guys feeling about, and they were like, woo. And I was like, I'm not doing my Trump stuff there. There's one guy who was in front. He was like this older guy, probably in his 80s, late 70s, early 80s. And he was laughing and coughing. I was like, oh, do you have good, so you got good health care, you're good? And he was like, yeah. I felt like this crowd wanted me, like they loved me when I was talking about, I think they wanted me to talk about like, oh, I'm black. And it's like that, I forget what you call that. Just like you're using it. I think it's a term that JL coined, but it's like the privilege that you have as a black comic in front of a bunch of white people. Like these are like middle-aged to senior citizen white people. And I think they probably would have liked me. I think they liked me. And then people came up to me after the show. But I think they would have liked me more if I was like, man, all y'all white people, man, am I going to get it or not? But I didn't do that, man, because that's really not my act. But I'm pretty much the same guy. And I did some older shit and they fucking loved it. It was fun. I had a good time. And it made the trip just like, oh, like this is all right, comedy. Like, thank God, like I can do this. And I feel like I wasn't nervous at all to do a set. There was no anxiety to have. So I got through it. Then I had to drive 2 hours back to Albany to the hotel that I stayed at. If I had it all to do it all over again, I probably would have got a hotel closer to that area, maybe in Utica or something. But whatever, man, it's one of those experiences for the love of the game. And oh my God, I was so fortunate to not really get into any worse trouble than I needed to be. And I would just say, if you have the option to get a four-wheel drive vehicle, get a fucking four-wheel drive vehicle, because that wasn't even that much, like that, it wasn't even that much snow, but like I could tell how that shit was accumulating fast. It was so, I'd never been, and I guess this is why people go all the way up north to go skiing, because it snows all the time. But it was just like different pockets where it would be snowing, then it wouldn't be snowing, it's snowing, it wouldn't be snowing. It's just like, what the fuck? But it was, I got through it, you guys. All right. So let's get to a couple things and then we'll get you to Al. But I felt like I had to share that experience. I didn't tell my parents. Thank God they don't listen to the show. But I wasn't going to tell them that shit. I'm 37 and my parents will, you know, I still, they don't need to know. So I did see a movie this week. I didn't go to the theater. I didn't have time, but I rented a movie last night on demand. This movie that I found the trailer. I don't know how I was looking at it on, maybe it came up in my Facebook feed or Twitter or something, but this movie called Wolves, which is, it's in theaters, but I think it's in limited release in New York City. It's playing at the IFC Center. So I'll read this. It's a movie that stars Michael Shannon, the super gorgeous Carla Gugino, and what's the lead kid's name? Taylor John Smith and Zazie Beetz. So I watched the trailer. I was like, okay, I want to check this out. And I will read you the blurb. Anthony is a standout player on his Manhattan High School's basketball team with seemingly everything going for him. A killer three-point shot, a loving girlfriend, and a chance at a scholarship to Cornell. But Anthony's dreams of playing college ball are jeopardized by his volatile father. What? Wow, Chris. By his volatile father, a hard-drinking writer whose compulsive gambling threatens to derail the lives of both his wife and son. 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. I think they're going a little too hard on it. It low-key reminded me of like a white Finding Forrester to a certain degree, but this is, it's not that. I guess just the interracial romance between the lead character, the lead guy and his girl, prep school type stuff. That kind of reminded me of it. But overall, it was totally different. I enjoyed this movie a lot because I was talking at the TV when I was watching. I was like, oh, shit. And it has an interesting twist. It's kind of like, this is a movie twist. But then at the same time, it's like this couldn't really happen. And then there were twists that I was like, oh, shit, is this how it's going to go? Are you kidding me? Like when there were a couple reveals that I was like, oh, shit. So I really liked it. Rotten Tomatoes, rating be damned. I enjoyed this. Michael Shannon's a top notch actor. Carla Gugino, beautiful, talented. So I recommend this movie. If you pay, what did I pay, like $6 or $7 on demand? It's fine. So I really enjoyed it. I recommend it. Got a new video game this week called Horizon Zero Dawn. Why did I not cue this up for you guys? I've been excited. I've been anticipating this game for quite some time, ever since maybe about a month ago when I saw their story trailer. And I was like, oh, shit, I'm sold. I'm pre-ordering this game. Like, I had some GameStop credit, and I was like, all right, I'm putting like 20 down on it, and I'm a cop it. I want to give you like a synopsis of this game, and then we'll get you to Al. Let me see where we can go. All right, I'll read you this. All right. From Wikipedia. In the near future, humanity has mastered holographic and robotic technologies. However, some unknown calamity causes the human civilization to collapse, leading machines to dominate the planet. Many years later, the remaining humans have regressed to primitive tribal societies, with their technology advanced predecessors vaguely remembered as the old ones. Despite living at the mercy of the machines, humans have been able to peacefully coexist with them, only having to occasionally hunt machines for parts. But a recent phenomenon known as the derangement has caused machines to become more aggressive towards human, and larger and deadlier machines have begun to appear, threatening the survival of the human race. And you play this character named Aloy, who is a hunter, and she can hunt these robots, and you take her on this quest to figure out what the fuck is going on. And it's really fucking good. This is about the best game that I've played since The Last of Us so far. Like it I've played for probably maybe 3 hours or so, if that. And the first 20 minutes I started playing this game, it was breathtaking. Like it's a beautiful game. And you can, like with PS4, you can do these like snapshots. You can take pictures of the scenery and all that stuff. And it's really good. And it's a character I think that you can emotionally invest in. From the jump, like you fall in love with this character, Aloy. And it's really good. It's really fun so far. It's got the RPG feel. It's got all of the characteristics of some of the games that I've enjoyed since I started back playing since, I guess, like 2013, since like 4 years ago, where it's got that Tomb Raider vibe. It's like the like with the maps and stuff, like crafting, like The Last of Us, all these really good elements, even Life is Strange. So it's really good. I really enjoy it. And I don't know when I'll finish it, but when I do, I'm going to probably try to get Mike Brown back on the show, because I know he has it, and then maybe just kind of do a postmortem on it and just talk about it whenever I get done and he gets done. So I highly recommend Horizon Zero Dawn if you're a gamer, if you have a PS4 and you're into RPGs and third person type games. It's a good one. It's good. All right, so I don't know why I had like a brain fart. Let's get you to Al Jackson. Al Jackson is a terrific comic. He's just a fucking pro. Like, he's been doing it for a while, and he's been on Comedy Central. He's had a Half Hour. He's been on tons of different shows. He tours all across the country, and he's just a really good comic. And I've been trying to get him on for quite some time. And just in a moment of serendipity, I just happened to text him and just say, hey, man, do you want to, I just want to check in to see when you had availability. And he was like, I could do it today. I was like, all right, let me drop what I'm doing after work and let's do a podcast. And we did it, man. And we had a great conversation. And I definitely want to have him back because we were the way that we started it. Well, you'll hear it the way that we started the conversation. And I just had like a couple questions to ask him about it. And then just blossom into this really long conversation about some really cool shit. And I hope you enjoy it. This is me talking to the very funny Al Jackson. So you're a Cleveland guy. How do you feel about your the changes that the Cavs are making?
I think they're doing what they know that they had to do, which is do whatever they have to do to make LeBron happy. And I don't think that they like having to spend as much money as they have, having to re-sign certain guys that they probably would have let go, like JR.
Yeah.
But I think after the first time, you know, with the, because I mean, the first time LeBron was with the Cavs, and it sounds crazy to say it now, but a big reason he left is because the Cavs signed Shaq over Amari Stoudemire. And that's who LeBron wanted. It's like, you know, they were unable to get him help, and LeBron showed him once that he could leave. I don't think he'd do that again, but just the proposition of what it would do to the team is just too much. So really, LeBron, it's LeBron's team.
Yeah.
It's a player that owns a team. Like, let's stop with the Dan Gilbert shit. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's LeBron's team, and he does what he wants. And I mean, when he's got that ring for your city, I mean, you can't really argue with him.
Yeah, I don't know why people get so upset about that. They get so bent out of shape about players taking ownership of their lives, like their careers. And it's not like,
well, I think you know what that is, bro.
Well,
you know what that is.
Well, yeah, it's racism.
Yes, it definitely is. I mean, no one cares when there are other free agents, like when Tom Brady wants to bring somebody in and, you know, was willing to do anything for it. You know, now granted, I do respect Tom because he does take a pay cut, mm-hmm. but Tom Brady has first and final say over anything that happens on that team.
Yeah.
And I have never heard anybody say a word about it. So I don't understand why LeBron is any different.
You know, I listen to Dan Levitard a lot, and he seems to be challenging the mainstream thought where it comes to, okay, LeBron is taking control of his career. He's making things happen for his friends on the outside, like his friends coming up and everything like that. But it just seems like we, the fans, collectively get bent out of shape that he's doing this stuff, that he's in control, you know? Like, I don't understand, because it's just like, it's like even you mentioned Tom Brady, like he even takes somewhat of a subservient role to Belichick. And I mean,
right.
And Belichick has the pedigree that you would probably have that subservient role to, but I think it does rub people the wrong way when it comes to LeBron. Yeah. So.
Well, I think basketball is different than football, and obviously there's less players on the floor. Right. But I don't think Tom Brady would ever think for a second that he could accurately evaluate an offensive lineman that's coming out of the University of Montana as opposed to one coming out of the University of Georgia State. Right. You know, I think that LeBron, who's been playing basketball since he was probably 2.5 years old, can tell what kind of players he needs on the floor and which ones aren't working. And I think that's where a lot of these players get frustrated. It's like when you look at guys like Carmelo that don't have that autonomy, mm-hmm. they keep getting saddled with, you know, whoever they traded for Jeremy Lin and, you know, the Jordan Farmar and, you know, a couple loose pieces here and there, you know, Pablo Prigioni,
yeah.
And guys that are just, they're just guys that you're not going to win with.
And, dude,
and I think go ahead.
No, go, continue.
I was just saying that LeBron's like, he can't, I don't think people understand that, and here's a double negative for all the kids listening. LeBron can't not win. Mm-hmm. Because if he does not win, all of these sports reporters are going to line up with their penis in their hands, masturbating, getting ready to talk about how he's a bust, and how he can't get it done, and how Dan Gilbert should never. If he doesn't win, shit falls apart for my city of Cleveland. It falls apart for his brand, for his logo. It falls apart for Nike or whoever the hell he represents. LeBron has to win. And even if he's wrong about a free agent here and there.
Oh, shit.
Did I lose you?
I lost. Yeah. Fucking technology. It's all good.
Oh, that's all right.
You just saying about the city and everything.
Right. I'll just say from here, like, LeBron has so much pressure on him to win. I mean, just on a local level, in terms of just like what it does for the city of Cleveland, what it does for 41 regular season games. Has anybody, as an economist, ever sat down and thought about what a sold out stadium does for 41 games into a downtown environment, where you're talking about what it does for the bars, what it does for the hotels, what it does for the nightclubs, what it does for the Uber drivers, for the taxi drivers, for the guys that sell hot dogs in front of the stadium. For everybody is making money off of one dude, one guy.
Well, they've made documentaries about it. They made Believeland.
Right. It's an entire city based around one guy because there's nothing else. And I think it's people that live, you know, Cleveland is a major city. It does have three professional sports teams, but you know, when you talk about some places just don't have as much as other places, I mean, Cleveland, it's the Cavs. And I mean, we technically the Browns, but they're so bad we can't really talk about them. We can't waste podcast time on them.
Well,
podcast time is too valuable.
Part of me feels I have an allegiance to RG3 because he's in the black quarterback fraternity. So it's hard for me when people talk shit about him and he gets hurt. I still feel bad about it.
He's a weird case. Yeah. I think that RG3 has not been allotted. The thing that not only just because I don't like to view the world in black and white and things like that. The humanity that black men are never allowed to have. Where I think RG3 is a fucking weirdo. Different than I think Jay Cutler is a weirdo.
Yeah.
I think that we're comedians. A lot of our friends are weirdos. That doesn't mean that they're not beautiful people. It means that they're difficult to understand. It means that they might come off obtuse to certain people. They might come off as aloof, which RG3 most certainly does to certain people. But it doesn't mean that he's a bad guy. And he immediately got that bad guy selfish tag right after his first year out of Baylor. But I mean, if you look at it, I mean, what has he really done? What they did to him, what Gruden did to him when he got that final concussion in Washington, when he left him in the third quarter of that preseason game and he got a concussion, that was assault. That was a criminal act. You're having guys that are going to be back on the loading docks with FedEx blocking for your quarterback, and you know he's going to get hurt, which he did.
Yeah.
Tell me one starting quarterback that's playing in the goddamn third quarter of a preseason game. It's never been heard of. And that move was never questioned. And so you know what time it is, homie.
Oh, yeah.
You know what time that is. So, I mean, that was no different than if you had me out there blocking after a night of hanging out with y'all at the comedy club. He had no chance.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, and especially a guy that they knew was going to get hurt, a guy that they know has self-esteem issues. And this is what you get. So, they've psychologically and physically crippled this dude, and he'll never be the same because of it.
So you think he has self-esteem issues?
He definitely does. He's just like, I mean, he's got a weird hairstyle. He met that one girl and immediately tattooed his name. Like, what man? Do you know what dude in your phone? If you can pull up any dude in your phone right now, has met a girl and within 6 months has her name tattooed in calligraphy on his forearm. Something that theoretically you can never cover up for the rest of your life. Like, come on, man.
Maybe you're right.
Like, it's just a weird thing to do. And it's something that you do to try and tell that person, please don't leave me.
Maybe you're right. That's a different way to look. Because I always thought, you know, in his press conferences, when he was with the Redskins, my dad would even say, he's talking too much. He's talking too much. I was like, well, he's a quarterback. He's the face of the franchise. And people were getting mad at him because he had endorsements or commercials. Like, what quarterback doesn't have a local commercial or a Subway commercial? Like, I don't see why it's a problem for him to have it. And that, and regardless of who he is, and I think you bring up a really good point. Maybe he is a weirdo, just like Jay Cutler is. Like, he's always got the resting bitch face, Jay Cutler does.
Yeah, he does. He's a weird, surly guy. I mean, I've met guys that, you know, I used to work for HBO Real Sports, so I've met a lot of those athletes. Uh-huh. Some of those guys are not that pleasant. You know, fucking John Elway is not the greatest guy. So, shots, you know, fired. It's just like, oh, yeah, he's a fucking dickhead. And so, but he can be, you know, he's John Elway. I mean, I guess, you know, people have been kissing his ass since he was in Stanford in 1978. I mean, I guess that probably does wear on your personality when you've been famous more than you haven't been famous. So
that's true.
You know, I don't begrudge John for that. I mean, but you know, I don't understand why athletes, especially when we have a camera in their face 24/7, and we want them to speak, and we want to get to know them better. Once they start speaking, we start telling them to be quiet. I don't quite follow that logic,
dude. That's the thing, man. Like, and it just makes me angry because from a guy who's been, so I turned 37 last week, and I like to think that
right.
I've been quote unquote woke for most of my life, like since at least like 11 or 12. At least when Malcolm X came out in 1991. So I'll put it there. When Spike Lee started making his mark, I was like 11, 12 years old. And you just have this awareness of who you are as a person, what it is culturally, how you're seen by other people, and you just take that with you. But when it seems frustrating to me when this stuff happens where it's like, this isn't new. Like, it's not new the way these guys get treated. And I tend to side with the athletes. Like, as we're talking right now, I've got NBA TV on mute, and they're playing a rerun of the Knicks and Raptors game where DeRozan hit the game-winning shot, I think, last night.
And, like, and said buckets.
Yeah.
I love it.
And it's just like, and looking at Melo, I tweeted this like last week. I think Carmelo Anthony is underrated as a person. I don't think he's, maybe he's a ball stopper or whatever, but he's still like he's a Hall of Famer. And
first ballot.
Yeah, and it's, and like he had this web series called Stay Melo where he would go like to all these different places, and I think he went to Rikers and like talked with the prisoners and did all kinds of shit, like just like humanitarian like stuff. And I was like, I fucking like this guy,
you know? which he didn't have to do,
right?
And I'm looking at you, Jordan, Michael Jeffrey.
Yeah,
you know, and it's fine that Michael didn't do anything. I don't think that you should have to do anything in this world. We don't sit up and say, hey, the CEO of, you know, Dick's Sporting Goods doesn't have enough to say on social issues.
Yeah.
What athletes can,
right.
Just, you know, it's great when they do, but I think that the first step for us being considered as real 100% citizens in this country is to make it so that we understand that we don't have to do shit no different than Mary Kate and Ashley aren't social activists. This kids are worth $2 billion. I ain't heard a peep out of them motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You know? So why does Jordan have to do it if they don't?
Right.
It'd be nice if he did. Mm-hmm. It'd be great if he did. But he don't want to do that. Michael wants to get drunk and play golf, which I can't begrudge him for.
Right.
So, you know, I think that we need to stop asking our black athletes to be one thing or another.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, it'd be nice if you want to be a role model.
Yeah.
But some dudes ain't wired like that.
Right.
Some dudes are just good cover corners, you know, and they're not nice guys. Like, I don't understand why black men have to be this whole, 360 human being when we don't ask that of these average-ass college students that come out of school every year? Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not blown away by anybody. You know, how many people do you meet that are truly dynamic people where you're like, wow, you're a doctor and you also set up wells in the Sudan and you also play rollerball? You know, like, really you know, like, there's not, we don't expect exceptional things from anybody except people that can already do one thing exceptionally well. Mm-hmm. Isn't that enough that you can, I mean, I played a lot of pickup basketball. And just when you play pickup basketball against somebody that's in Division III, the level that they are on, it's just, it doesn't even look like they should be on the court.
They're killing you.
You know? It's amazing. Just amazing ball players. And I mean, they couldn't ride the bench at University of Virginia. You know? Yeah. It's just like, we need to stop asking the upper 1% of successful people in their field to do more. If they want to do more, if they want to take the money to do more, great. If you want to be Lou Williams and just have two girlfriends and lay up in the house, do that too.
It's something that's interesting to me that I think most black artists, black entertainers have to do. And I've asked most that I've had on the show within the last year, do you feel as a black entertainer that you are, that is there a burden to do your art and be mindful of what you're doing and how you're perceived? Okay.
There definitely is, because you can't, if you make one misstep, it's you know, I'm cool with Hannibal, you know, and I've seen articles written on him. And I don't speak for any other man than myself, but just, you know, I see articles that are written on him. Where just like, if he makes one misstep in a show, if he makes one misquote in a show, now obviously he's at a different level.
Yeah,
but it's like, if you make one misstep, you're gonna get roasted, dog. And I don't care. I mean, he seems pretty immune to it, but I know I wouldn't be. I know I would read all that shit. And I don't. When you see these athletes going nuts at their locker after a game of a reporter going after a reporter, it's because they read some shit that motherfucker said.
Yeah.
You know, like, it don't matter if you're DeMarcus Cousins or you're, you know, the Tony Rock. You read criticism. We're human beings. Yeah. You read your Twitter mentions. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'll never forget, after one of my Comedy Central things aired, somebody sent me a tweet and said, please tell me you do not get paid to do professional comedy.
Jesus Christ.
That's so mean.
And what did you say?
It was kind of funny, though.
Did you
respond? I didn't say anything. It was so mean. I was just stunned.
Yeah.
That's me, and I'm... You know, I'm at a certain level, but
yeah.
I mean, that, you know, people say horrible shit to you, and I've always said the Kardashians deserve to get paid what they get paid just because they have to carry the burden of hate and the burden of being the example of everything that is wrong with our society. With every weak analogy anybody has, everybody's like, well, we're a society, we just, that's why you think the Kardashians is okay. Like, any time that their name is brought up, it's usually in a negative fashion. I think there should be some compensation for that, for carrying the burden of hate for your entire life, for doing nothing more than being, what's the worst that they are, a bunch of rich narcissists?
Yeah.
What else would you do if you had a, like, listen, we have a social contract, and without saying it, we were like, look, we kind of wanted to see your ass. And they were like, well, you got to kind of pay for it. We'll charge TMZ and, you know, get a couple bikini shots. So we're like, cool. And they take a couple bikini shots and it gets, you know, 100 million views on Instagram. That's the contract that we have.
Yeah.
And so we can't then turn around as a side and be like, can you believe all they do is wear bikinis and we can't? Look, man, this is what we want. We want Carmelo Anthony to shoot corner jumpers. That's what he does.
Yeah.
Asking him to do anything else after that, it is disingenuous on our part. And the fact that he does way more than that, I think should be applauded, but he never gets that. He just gets shit on from his organization.
Yeah, it just pisses me off, because you get to the point where it's like, I was listening to the sports talk radio this morning in New York, and I'm a LeBron fan, so I root for Cleveland. But I just kind of, in my older age, I just kind of like enjoy players. I enjoy the storylines. I enjoy Twitter when people do memes and they roast each other. Like, I just love that about the NBA, and it's just, it's so much fun. But where was I going with that? Like, somebody was saying, go ahead.
Oh, just no, you said, where were you going with that? And you were just saying you kind of enjoy the storyline as much as you enjoy hearing that, you know, Washington beat San Antonio 75-73. It's there's more in there.
Yeah, it's just so much more, and I play 2K, and I enjoy that shit. But, it, like, somebody was saying, like, oh, you know, we got to get one guy was like, we got to get rid of Melo. We got to do this. And then they said, oh, we got to get rid of Derrick Rose. And then the host said, you know, he was basically like, well, you wouldn't have – Derrick Rose wouldn't have come to New York if Melo wasn't there. I mean, so it's a reason that you're getting some of these guys. I just look at the Knicks like the Redskins used to be, like, and like when he would get players on their way out. Like, Snyder would get Charles Mann back.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Leave or get Deion Sanders when it was time to – oh, was it like Richard – I think – was it like Charles Haley or something? No, it wasn't Charles Haley. He would get guys on their way out, and it would just
right. The guys that you can still sell tickets with, yeah. But everybody knows in the league that they're washed up.
Yeah,
I mean, and it's a lot like that with stand up. And I mean, obviously, no names, please. But sometimes you look at lineups and you see like some semi-famous '90s sitcom star that's doing a weekend at a club.
Yep,
and everybody in comedy knows that motherfucker stinks, mm-hmm. But the tickets are $35. And it's going to take 20 minutes into their show before these people know that they've been had. You know? It's like that's the same thing with football. You go ahead and you sign a dude who's, oh, we got Ed Reed on the Texans. It's like, do you? You've got Ed Reed's exoskeleton. You know what I'm saying? Like, Ed Reed is no longer that guy that, you know, he's not the Ed Reed from the Canes. So let's keep it 100.
While we're still on sports, I wanted to get your take because I haven't had anybody on here to talk sports in a minute. How do you feel about the Darrell Revis situation? Do you know? Are you aware of that?
I saw that. I didn't hear anything more after. You know what? Like what were they saying? Were they saying that he was being provoked, or what's their take? Because it seemed like the way I judge situations like that is how quickly teams try and distance themselves.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like they were immediately, like, it was like they announced that and then they were immediately like, we're not on the hook for his contract. Like, it wasn't like we're going to stand by him until all the facts come out. It was just like, hey, we don't even know that dude like that.
That's how they try to, yeah, that's how radio here tried to play it. They were like, well, he didn't have a good year last year or so. But it's like these dudes, he was in his hometown. I think he was looking to buy property, maybe start a restaurant or something. And these two dudes rolled up on him, and they said, are you Darrell Revis? And he was like, yeah. And then somebody pulled out their camera, and then their words were exchanged, and the camera phone got taken. And then all of a sudden, those dudes was laying on the ground. They have, like, some footage of it. I didn't really see everything, but that's basically the gist of it. But those dudes rolled up on a guy from Aliquippa, PA. Like a hard, like, working town, like a tough town that Bruce Springsteen would sing about if he was from. That's who he's talking about. Like, it's like, why would you do that? But then, like, all of a sudden now he might spend like 20. He's not going to, but like 20 years in jail and shit. Like, I don't know. It pisses me off.
It just, I mean, you know, it's just the how quickly. It's just like, well, he just might have to do some time. It's like until any one person that was involved in the housing crisis does one day in jail, how about we leave Darrell Revis out?
Yeah.
You know, like not one of those motherfuckers saw one second of prison, which, first of all, explain that to me. And then tell me why we over here talking about Darrell Revis and some dudes that was probably doing some stuff that dudes know could potentially get you punched in the mouth.
It's just like they're disposable. Once you're done with, that's why I want these guys to get all the money they can. I just want them to get whatever they can, and before they can, when they can, until they can't anymore. It just
right. You realize like that how they look at these players as the disposable commodities, single serving commodities. And I mean, you look at the guys in college, mm-hmm. Conley messed his knee up. That dude, Nick Chubb from Georgia, tore his knee up. who was the kid from USC? He hurt himself in the weight room. A bunch of these guys. The goddamn kid in his last fucking game for, excuse my language, at Notre Dame this year tore his leg up and missed his whole rookie season. He was going to be a top five pick. Did Notre Dame compensate him for blowing his? I think he tore three. Jaden Smith or something, like Jelani Smith or something. He missed this entire. I think the Bears picked him or something. I don't know. Somebody, if that's how good he was, he still went top. He went first round, and they knew he wasn't going to play the whole season. But it's like these guys go out there and destroy their bodies and get nothing in return. The schools don't do anything for them. They don't let them finish their education, and that's just college. So. These schools don't care, and so why should they? Get your money, homie.
Yeah, and they
get your money, man.
They try to shit on these dudes like work ethic. I could talk about this for hours. It just makes me mad. And now that we're talking about this, it made me think of that. Have you seen Get Out yet?
No, I'm going to see it tonight.
Okay, I will. Well, text me when you're done. But
I can't wait.
Think about this part of the conversation. After you're done, and I'm not gonna say anything else, but yeah, man, what I wanted you to talk about, and we got in this really good, interesting topic or whatever. What do you think? Do you think that adding Bogut and Deron Williams, do you think that's gonna put them over the top and make them even more competitive with Golden State?
I think a lot of people look at moves like that and they're like, why would you add? He's washed up. Look, the Cavs are adding Andrew Bogut because they need him to give them 4 minutes during one playoff game.
Yeah.
That's the only reason he's there. D. Williams, they need a backup because here's the thing. But it's really the thing that the reason that guys like, I don't know who's in the league forever. Who's a point guard for like Andre Miller?
Exactly. He's like Andre Miller 2.0.
Yeah, it's just like you need a dude that's going to come into a situation and he's not going to have urine running down his legs. Mm-hmm. And as funny as that may sound, when it's fine during the regular season when y'all are both 25-21 records, when it's game six and there's 33 million people watching. You need a guy that's going to be out there and is going to take that shot, that's going to make that pass, that's not going to forget to run the offense, it's not going to take a bad shot because they don't want that pressure. And that's why veteran guys like Bogut that have been there, veteran guys like D. Will, are still valuable. Like, you don't need them in a regular season. You know, those guys are broke down and washed up and rich and don't care.
Yeah.
But for those few moments, you need veterans. And that's why you look at all those Heat teams. They all went out and they got those veterans like Shane Battier, mm-hmm. You know, Mike Doliak was backing up Shaq for a while. You know, all these guys that couldn't really play, but they got these guys to come in and play. P.J. Brown, you know, all these guys that come in and can give you minutes. Haslam, Ray Allen, these guys that come in and ball because they're not scared. These young guys, they're just not ready. It's not like they're weak dudes. They're just, you know, your first playoff series, you're going to play like it's your first playoff series.
Yeah. I'm excited about those changes because I was wondering, like, who are they going to get? And they got D. Will, and I was like, oh, shit, they're not fucking around. They got Korver, and I hope, hopefully JR will be healthy. I hope his baby's okay. Hopefully he'll be back.
Right.
You know, so then I was just thinking about this over the weekend. I was like, LeBron beat Kevin Durant before.
Yes. And, I mean, I still think there's still going to be some playoff issues in terms of that Golden State team. I know that they still got some tricks up their sleeve, but I still think they're going to have some things to deal with in terms of who takes the last shot, who's in and out of rhythm. You know, there's only one basketball. And, you know, if Steph is on and KD's on, then what's Klay doing? And if Klay, Steph, and are on, then what's KD and Draymond doing? Yeah. Draymond's volatile. It's just like it's not a home run with them because they haven't done it. Like on paper, it's over. On paper, they look like an NBA 2K team that you took the override trade thing off. You know, so you could just do whatever.
That shit is unfair. You know? Like I played with them. I would never do a season with them, but it's so unfair, dude. it's really unfair with those guys in 2K. It's not.
Well, it's unfair with what it did this year. I mean, look at how it's thrown the balance of the league off. I mean, mm-hmm. that team is lapping other teams. It's not, sometimes it's non-competitive basketball because they have 4 of the 5 Western Conference starting all-stars on their team.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean, what is, they're literally rolling in with a barnstorming team every night, and it's thrown off the balance of the league. And I mean, you know, hopefully the Cavs will be able to compete, but I mean, we needed a miracle last year.
It was amazing. That was the best superhero movie of last year. That what LeBron did, like, obviously Kyrie helped him. He had help and everything, but that block, it was amazing. Like I was just, oh man, I was so stressed out watching that thing.
Bro, it was, I mean, just as a Cavs fan, unapologetically cried like a baby when we won. Didn't see it coming. I mean, I was with a bunch of Cleveland people out here in L.A. And, you know, I just, the whole game, when we were, I was just like, I think they were up 9 or 7 at half. And I was just like, we kept it close. As long as we can come out and keep it close in the third, we got a chance, and we did that. And I just, and then there was that period in the fourth where, like, no one scored for, like, mm-hmm. 6 minutes. And, you know, it was like 89-89 until Kyrie hit that three.
Yeah.
And there was just so much. I really do believe that the city of Cleveland willed that shot in through just straight mental energy. Like, I was not going to let him miss that shot. Like, I couldn't take it. Yeah. And when he hit that, I mean, I don't think I've ever been that exhilarated except for, like, the birth of my kid.
Wow. I mean, I can believe that coming from a Clevelander. I mean, I visited once. I did Ramon Rivas's Accidental Comedy Festival 2 years
ago. Right. I was with Ramon when I saw it happen.
Yeah. And did he cry?
No, I did, though. I'm not even fronting. Definitely did.
I can believe it, man. I don't fault you one bit. I mean...
Yeah.
And I just being in that city, but I think I have an affinity towards the Midwest anyway, because I lived in Chicago for 5 years, but it was something about that town, and I was glad that LeBron finished that narrative, because he's basically a child star. He's a child prodigy.
Right.
And I think he
from that area.
Yeah, from that area. I think he exceeded expectations by leaps and bounds, and anything after this is icing on the cake. I just want him to win as much as he can while he can still, you know, I want him to win as many as he can, you know.
What do you think the ceiling for his career could be now? Like, maybe if he got this one this year, like, what do you think he could realize? Because that would be what, 4 rings?
That's 4
this year.
I don't think he, I think he can get one this year. I think he can get at least 2 more. If he gets people that want to complete, maybe Wade is at the back 9, but I think they're setting stuff up so Wade could come, just because they're friends.
And it seems like that Chicago is completely dismantling whatever that is. I don't even know if you can call that a team, but. Yeah. Whatever they're doing, it seems like Chicago doesn't want to be doing that anymore.
Because they don't want I don't think they want Jimmy Butler anymore, based on all the trade talk that's been coming out. So I don't know.
I'm not even discreet about letting trade talk leak out anymore. Which
I kind of lost you.
That's a telltale sign.
You broke up.
Oh, you can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
They're not even really that discreet about letting the trade talk leak out anymore. It's just kind of a thing now.
Yeah. Like with DeMarcus Cousins and everything, he didn't know. He said he didn't know. He said that Vlade told him he wasn't going to get traded. So,
well, I mean, you saw the way Vlade reacted, and I mean, he just, you know, he was very uncandid. Like, well, we had a better deal. I think that somebody from above was like, get him out of here, and that's what happened. That's what happened. So now Sacramento is like, they're going to be, for the next couple of years, one of those teams that anytime somebody talks about relocating, it's going to be them.
Mm-hmm. They're the new Sixers.
They're the new Sixers. You know, especially because they're not a big enough city where they're, you know, at least Philly can be like, hey, we got we have the four major sports. Like, we have enough of a fan base to support the team. I mean, Sacramento, I mean, I don't know if you've been to Sacramento. It's a nice place, but I mean, it's probably the size of San Antonio.
Okay.
It doesn't have any, it doesn't have a baseball or hockey or damn for sure no football team.
Yeah.
And when you have cities like that, when they start talking about like, well, you know what, you know, San Antonio, they could really support the football team, you know, who they're going to be looking at Sacramento like, hey, y'all have sucked and your attendance has stunk. maybe you guys might just get a D-League team and have to eat that.
It's so crazy because you think like what was that? Was it 15 years ago when they were playing LA in the Western
Conference? The Lakers, yeah. C-Web, Vladdy, ironically, you know, Mike Bibby, Bobby Jackson,
yep.
Peja Stojakovic. I mean, they had a really, really nice team.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, thanks to the refs that series, that didn't happen. But, you know, it was... you know, you have your window, and that window shuts. And that's why, you know, you always want to tell people that are from Chicago, like, everybody wants to blow everything. Blow it up.
Yeah.
Blow it up and get a bunch of rookies. Trust me, as a Browns fan, we keep blowing it up. That does not work. We blew it up until we got LeBron, but that was a freak accident.
Do you think it was a freak accident? You don't think that was fixed?
I don't know. I'm always like this. I was listening to a political podcast the other day, you know, and they were kind of debunking people that talk about conspiracy theories. And it's like, nothing has ever really been able to be kept a secret. I mean, Bill Clinton couldn't keep a cum-stained dress off the nightly news. I think that people, would it be worth it for the league for Cleveland to get LeBron, as opposed to somebody leaking and being able to prove that the draft was fixed, which would then call into question whether the games are fixed, which would destroy the betting line, which is really what the NBA is about, which would destroy attendance and fan trust.
Yeah.
And it would affect generations of fathers telling their sons, "Oh, don't watch the NBA; it's a bunch of pay." Would it be worth it?
Mm.
They already have this financial juggernaut. What are they giving a shit? The NBA prints money. Prints money. What do they give a shit about? It's a great story,
mm-hmm.
but it's not like Cleveland. I could even hear that argument if we're talking about New York because it's a bigger market.
Right.
But what do they care? Milwaukee, Cleveland, Sacramento, San Antonio, those one-off markets, would the NBA risk everything that it's built from the days where it was coming on TV on tape delay because it was that unpopular? Would they be willing to go back to that so that they could, you know,
yeah.
so that they could have a feel-good story on inside stuff? You know, like, who cares?
Because I've heard the term for years now. The league is better when New York is good, Boston is good, and LA is good. Like, anybody else, they don't give a shit. Like, they really don't care about. And now that go ahead.
It's gone. I was just gonna say, have you ever been at a bar and Golden State is going heads up against, you know, the Cavs, and you go, wow, I sure wish the Knicks was playing Boston right now. This sucks.
No.
You want to watch the best players play against each other.
Yeah.
And for a while, that was Boston Lakers. That was Lakers Detroit. That was Knicks Pacers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was Knicks Bulls. That was Cavs Bulls. That was Rockets versus whoever the hell they played.
Yeah.
And it's gone on. Like that. That's the way the league is always going to. The league is always going to turn over, and there are going to be some teams that are good. And so, I mean, if you dug your grandfather up or my grandfather, and I told him, you know, hey, the Lakers have basically been irrelevant for 6 years, he'd be like, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you told a kid that's 12, lives out here in L.A., the Lakers, he'd be like, I don't give a shit about the Lakers. I'm a Clippers fan.
Yeah.
You know, the only people that talk about the Lakers is old dudes. Like me, you know, I remember when they were good. Like a kid 12, he doesn't know, give a shit about it. He thinks the Lakers, he thinks Kobe Bryant is an old man. he does. He thought Kobe Bryant is an old man.
Yeah.
And he thinks Blake Griffin is the shit. That's because true. In his lifetime, no different than when you talk to a 70-year-old guy and he's like, LeBron, fuck him. It's all about Oscar Robertson, you know? You know, whoever was good when you were young.
My dad will be 76 in April. And I remember when Kobe came into the league in 96, like, I was like, oh, I like Kobe. And I like Jordan, because me and him used to watch Jordan. We used to get the WGN feed, and we used to watch it all the time.
Yeah.
And my dad I was like, oh, Kobe. And I wanted to grow my hair out because Kobe had a kind of a fro.
I remember he had that mini fro for sure. Yeah,
he had the fro and shit. And my dad was like, I don't like Kobe. He doesn't comb his hair. And now he's
old man shit.
Yeah, and he's just like, but he grew to like Kobe. But I think my dad, I kind of take after my dad when it comes to like, that guy's just fucking good. Like, I don't care what team he's on. Like, that guy is great, and you should be enjoying him while you can. Like, I don't.
Yeah.
I like Jordan, LeBron, all these guys, Curry. That's why it's kind of hard for me. Like, I was conflicted the first year because I wanted LeBron more to complete that narrative more than I did for Steph Curry to win. And when he won, it was just like, okay, I like his story of being an underdog.
I don't know about an underdog.
Well,
Doug.
You know what? You know, and
Steph Curry is a rich kid that grew up with a professional shooting coach.
And that's the same.
Steph Curry never had to work a day in his life.
That's the same narrative that Bomani Jones puts out there, and I think both of you are right. But I think just as far as not being heralded, I think that's something that you could relate to. Like, you know, like coming up, like being a comedian is like, for the most part, is like being an unsigned rapper, you know, like you got to make a name for yourself. But just in that regard, for all the your dad is an NBA player. He went to what? Did he go to UVA or West? Where did his dad go? I got to look this up. Well, his dad is an ACC guy. None of those schools in North Carolina picked him. None of them except Davidson. And that just kind of like, I was like, fuck. All those schools, you have this pedigree of your dad being he went to Virginia Tech. Like, the school that your dad went to didn't even want you. Like, really? And nobody.
Right, that's right, yeah.
Nobody knew he was going to do this. Nobody knew he was going to do this.
And Dell Curry went to Virginia Tech. And the only reason I know that is because me and my friend are sports nerds, and we quiz each other on weird guys. We talked about this like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
Because I was like, is anybody famous ever going to Virginia Tech? And it was the only people that ever went to Virginia Tech was Del Curry and Bilbo Cole.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, if Virginia Tech, who has only turned out four pros in history, and the history of the university doesn't want you, I mean, that kind of does show you. I mean, he was small and you know, he didn't go to Davidson. So for that, I mean, I give him his props. I mean, I'm just a hater because I'm a Cavs fan. I mean, I have to be honest. I have biases like anybody else.
I totally understand. Like, I mean, me, I try to – and see, LeBron was somebody that got me – because I don't like how I become when I'm emotionally invested in sports. I get nervous. Why the fuck am I nervous on game 7? I'm not playing. I don't even have any money. I don't have any money on the line. I don't have any, like, but I guess it's just the way that he's treated in the media. You know, like your Skip Bayless's, him, the black athlete thing, the guy taking control over his career. It's just like, what are they going to say? I don't want what they're going to say about him if he loses, you know? And I've been saying this on the podcast like this year, where like trying to think positively about my career and life in general, where LeBron said before game 7, he said, you know, I'm just going to put it all out there and live with the results. And people try to say that, use this as an excuse. He said it on a number of occasions where he said, I wasn't supposed to be here. I was supposed to be a statistic. And
right.
It's kind of like that, golly shucks, I'm glad to be here, but I still have something to prove, and I know that I'm great, and I have this legacy, but at the end of the day, I've become something greater than, like, I thought I would become, you know?
That, yeah, and that's real. That's not hype. I mean, I think as black men, I think we realize that we get one chance. Mm-hmm. And when I say we get one chance, we don't get chances to fuck up. Yeah. I mean, if you look at, you know, I think, and it's not just so much a racial thing as it is an economic thing, but it's also a racial thing. I don't know how many chances black men have to really just screw up their life, really just really fuck up. I mean, if you go to jail because you were selling pot in college, you're kind of done. Mm-hmm. Whereas I think if you're a white kid and you're selling pot at Amherst College and you've got dreads, you know, and you have incense, I think once you that is because, like, you see what happened with the that kid that raped that girl, the white kid that raped the white girl in
Stanford or whatever?
At Duke, Stanford, yeah. He got, what, 6 months probation? Mm-hmm. It's because white guys are allowed to mess up.
Yeah.
Remember what he said to the judge? He was like, hey, I don't see why we would ruin this kid's life.
Yep.
What would that have been if that had been some 6'9 defensive lineman?
Yeah.
That dude would have been underneath the underbelly of the jail.
Mm-hmm.
As he should be. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But this kid will, the media will go away. This kid will change his name. His rich parents will move him somewhere, give him a job working somewhere under a pseudonym name, and he'll be able to live out some sense of a life.
Yeah.
And a black man raping a white girl behind a trash dumpster.
Oh my God.
And people roll up on him and find him in the act. And that motherfucker's not in jail. Mm-hmm. Where'd they do that at?
Yeah. It's.
Explain to me. Give me 10 scenarios in which that could happen. But that dude is not in jail. Well, we have his face. We have him caught in the act. We have his DNA. We have a confession from the girl. We have a confession from the dude. And he's not in jail. Explain to me how that happened.
It's amazing, man. It's just like Mel Gibson this weekend, his movie got nominated and he's got Best Director, and Casey Affleck, you know, the sexual harassment allegations, all this stuff swirling around Casey. He beat Denzel. Denzel, that's a role of a lifetime, man. And it was, I don't know how, if you're into movies and stuff like that, but
I am.
So how did you feel about that? Did you see Fences?
I did, and I felt like it was. I just don't think people understand like how difficult it is to do a movie that's a play.
Yeah.
So you're talking about like how many actual backgrounds did that movie have? Four. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not like you get the. It's almost like, in a weird way, a play is almost like stand up in that. You know, we don't have the luxury of having a laser light show behind. That's why I was thinking. Like stand up always loses in like America's Got Talent and stuff, because it's a guy standing there with a microphone and you're competing against a Japanese acrobatic team that juggles swords on a tightrope while unicycling. You know, we don't have props and colors and music. We just have our voices, and Denzel really just had the passion of a hard man that didn't know any other way to parent than like a gorilla. You know, and that's what we wanted to see conveyed. I thought he did such a great job like that. You know,
I've been saying it since I saw it. It reminded me of like LeBron in the playoff in the finals, where it's like, oh, this guy has another gear. Like I was like, holy shit, because it's easy to go back to Malcolm X and Hurricane, and Malcolm X is an amazing performance. But to do what he did, to make this guy who's essentially an asshole lovable, like dynamics, all these facets, this really complex person that you could see your dad in, your grandfather, your uncle, maybe yourself.
A lot of the men in your life, man.
Yeah,
for real.
It, like
100%.
And it might even be you if shit doesn't break well, break the way you want it to. And it's just
100%.
Like, and it's like, fuck, he killed it. And he directed it. And he fucking directed the movie. Like, I just, I don't know, man. I'm just,
I don't know. Look, man, You know what time it is.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, at this point, it's not so much talking about it, but I think, you know, once you are, you're 37, I'm 39, once you get to kind of the halfway point, you kind of unfortunately accept things for how they are and also accept things for how they used to be and how great it is that things are getting better and that,
yeah.
You know, we can connect on this incredible platform like a podcast, mm-hmm. where you and I can talk across the country clear as day.
Yeah.
You know, there's beautiful things happening too. So I don't acknowledge the bad without the good.
Oh, most def. Like I'm more upset at myself for thinking he had a chance. Cause Manchester by the Sea, that's the thing. That's the same thing. The way that I feel about LeBron, the way that I feel about black quarterback, that's my Achilles heel when it comes to like, you know, you could kind of be above it all when it comes to certain things. Like you could say, oh, it's just the movies. What pisses me off is where people will say like, all these rich people getting dressed up and congratulating themselves. I mean, we get excited about football. Like, that's some people's Super Bowl. That's some people's, like, I...
Most definitely it is.
You know, so I just like people like, some people like WWE. It's not my thing anymore, but I understand why people like it. It, you know, like, so I'm not going to shit on that, but I would just say that's where I kind of fall short when it comes to that, where all the rational variables, I understand them. I know what they are, what they're supposed to be, how it fits, but it's just like, I don't want to hear that because I like this guy should have won, or, you know, like, cause Manchester by the Sea was dope. Like, it was a good movie.
It was real dope. It was real dope.
15 to 20 minutes too long. Dope movie though. Like I like the director, like Moonlight. There was this like racial strife between La La Land and Moonlight. And I was like, La La Land is a good movie. I think people shitted on that a little too much, but it wasn't Moonlight. I don't know if you saw Moonlight, but
I did see Moonlight. I like that stories like that are now being told.
Yeah,
and that people, you know, it kind of, watching Moonlight, I was like, how many of these movies did not get made 20 years ago? Like, mm-hmm. That would have been dope. You know what I mean? I guess you can't live your life like that.
Right.
But it does make you kind of wonder, like, man, how many of these scriptures got thrown on the floor, mm-hmm. before it takes... And it's still, I mean, I guarantee you, whoever made Moonlight is still going to have to struggle to get their next film made. You know, they might get one, but if it's a flop, it'll just be, you know, back to the bottom of the heap with you.
I think he will.
You know?
I think it won't, because he did this movie that my listeners are tired of me talking about, like going on nine years ago now, Medicine for Melancholy with Wyatt Cenac.
With Wyatt, I've seen that, yeah.
I thought it was fucking fantastic. It's like, it was like a breath of fresh air for me, because it was black people in a contemporary setting just being people, just being complicated, complex people and dealing with each other. And I just thought it was so great. And so when he came out, when I knew Moonlight, when Barry Jenkins was doing this movie, I was like, holy shit. Like, nerds get excited about Star Wars, myself included. But I was just like,
right.
I was like, yo, this nigga, like, this dude, this shit is going to be. So, and it speaks to something that you mentioned a little earlier in the conversation, where this black male vulnerability that, or this humanity that you don't get to see that much.
Well, think about what you're saying and the reason that I agree with you so much, and the reason where you're like, somebody's asking you, what's your favorite movie? And you're like, is it one with a bunch of firefights? Oh, not really. Is there a magic sea dragon? Not really. What is it? What's this crazy movie? Black people being fully developed people, mm-hmm. is all we want to see on camera. Just a black person is a dynamic, because we know them. They are mothers and our girlfriends and our, you know, the old guy that you talk to in front of the store. Mm-hmm. It's like all these people are around, and you never see black characters presented like that. I always said, and I've been working on a bit about this, about how, like, it's just like, thank the Lord, they started making movies about white drug dealers so we could learn about their background. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you look at something like, you know, Breaking Bad or Weeds or the new one with Kathy Bates that Tom Bell is in. It's when white people, they're still in production.
Oh, okay.
But it's like, you know, when white people sell drugs, there is a reason.
Yeah.
There is a reason. Oh, he's selling drugs because he's sick and he wants to take care of his kids. What do you think black people are trying to sell drugs for? Cardio?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? We do it for the same reason, but it's like, we don't get our story told. And the only one that even really tried to do it was The Wire.
Right.
Where they explain, like, these guys are selling drugs, but drugs is really just a business. Like anything else, if you look at the way they set it up, the season one, they show Stringer going to college business classes.
Yeah.
Talking to his homeboys, like, hey, don't shoot on the block because we sell on the block. We want people to want to come on the block to buy our product. If you shoot it up, that's a problem for us.
Right.
Hey, let's form a coalition so we're not stepping on each other's toes and we can sell more product. It's just about business. It showed drug dealers as people. You know, and all the other ones are just like, you know, and I love the movie, but, you know, you look at some of my Boys in the Hood, what did you really know about Doughboy?
Not much.
He didn't take no shit.
One thing about Doughboy,
you know,
he didn't take no shit.
Yeah. He didn't take, you don't know, he didn't have a fucking last name. You know what I'm saying? You don't know shit about him except he's black and he sold drugs because that's what they do.
Yeah.
But when it's white people selling drugs, it's like, well, she sells drugs because her brother had cancer and then he had friends and then they needed to buy it. And so she reluctantly started selling drugs and now she's up good. It's like all this shit is made it so it's sympathetic when you have a white drug dealer on the screen. You even felt bad when the goddamn Johnny Depp got busted in Blow.
Right.
I was like, man, don't take Johnny. He's a good dude.
Yeah.
Johnny Depp flooded the country with cocaine, caused a billion overdoses, which eventually led to the jailing of an entire generation of black men through the three strikes and you're out bullshit crack laws, which again, we never, you know, you look at guys, you look at people that they glorify, the Wolf of Wall Street guys. You look at that, everybody walks out of there like, man, that was, what a way to live your life.
That guy
was a fucking... Yeah, go ahead.
I call it like a white superhero movie. Like, because they made a movie out of his life. Like, he went to jail, but then they made a movie about him. And the same for that movie, fucking War Dogs. They made it out. They made it out like Andy Dufresne. They went up Schitt's Creek and came out clean. Nothing happened.
Came out clean. No one walked out of that theater thinking, oh, man. Leo DiCaprio's character, probably, even though it was never shown on camera, destroyed a lot of lives through his pyramid scheme junk bond bullshit.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you never think about that. It's never shown. It's never shown. Like, how come all these, you know, you had the crack epidemic in the 80s, and everybody talks about crack like, well, that's why they went to jail. They were selling crack. Crack sucks. Crack is baking soda. Crack is because you're too broke to get real cocaine.
Right.
You know, crack is like hamburger helper for cocaine. It helps it stretch. You know, and so you throw all these people that basically have the lowest form of a drug in jail for years for having three rocks of baking soda and hot water.
Yeah.
But how come all these motherfuckers on Wall Street aren't there? How come we didn't have an entire generation of those motherfuckers in Studio 54? Or the entire offensive lineman for the fucking Raiders, or any actor, or anybody in the 70s or 80s that was doing cocaine. Why aren't all these people in jail? Yeah. Where are all these drug addicts that they were throwing in, all these drug laws that they had? It was just crack. So the shittier version gets you in trouble, but the pure one doesn't.
Yeah.
Explain that to me.
I mean, we, like you told me earlier, you know what it is.
You know what it is. But you know what, man? We can still get us out here and tell these jokes and enjoy our lives, man. I really do, man.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's part of it too. That's like with the climate of how the social climate, the political climate, I think you still have to keep going. Like, I like just talking to my parents, I was like, have you guys ever felt like this or experienced? They were like, yeah, you just got to keep going. You know, like, it's like,
yeah,
it's like to them, it's like, yeah, it sucks. And this is some bullshit, but it's same shit, new stall. You gotta keep going, man. So I want to get to you talking about your career, because what I appreciate about you, I just know you, I know you, but I don't know you, but I just know you as being a really good comic that does the road and is doing his thing, you know, without much fanfare that you probably should be getting more up for it. But
thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Like, so how did it start for you? I know, like, cause I think the first time I saw you, I might have been, did you do warm up for John Oliver?
I did the show, and I actually did the warm up as well. It's called Double Dipping. Yeah, I did that.
I guess maybe I want to get back to that, but how did the journey start for you? Like, you were a teacher before you started, right?
Right. I was down in Miami. I was teaching middle school, and I kind of just wanted something to do at night. So I started hanging out at this bar that used to have a comedy night. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so I would just watch the comics go up. And I never sat there and went like, oh, I could do that. But I was like, maybe I just want to try. Mm-hmm.
How old were you?
I was late in the game. I was 27.
Oh, that makes me feel good, because I was 29 when I started. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, I decided just to give it a try.
Yeah.
And I went up there and it went okay. You know, it didn't go, I didn't tear the roof down, but it was like, all right. Mm-hmm. You know, it was like, okay, I like this. There's something here for me. And, you know, I kept going back more and more. And eventually, you know, I got good enough where I became the house MC at the now defunct Miami Improv. And after that, it's crazy to think that, like, your home club is closed.
Why did that close?
It makes you feel old.
Why did it close?
I would go with, I don't know. I don't know how you. There's only one comedy club in Miami, and it's closed. So I don't know how you do that, but it happens. How do you close when you have no competition? I don't know how that happens.
I just think of it being a part of a chain, you know, like you just the improvs, and you think like, well,
yeah, you would think that it just gave them enough. It would give them enough cred, but I think some improvs, and obviously don't know all the dynamics. I think some improvs operate separately from, okay, like some have the name but aren't like part of the whole. I guess some are kind of like rogue. Improv is just kind of, I think, by the name.
Gotcha.
But again, I don't want to talk out of my ass. I really don't know. But so that one closed, and actually the Fort Lauderdale Improv closed. So it's weird that there's no stand-up comedy in South Florida, which is where I started. And what was such an advantage to me is that, you know, when I started, there were three A clubs between Miami, Fort Lauderdale, and West Palm, where every weekend I could work with national headliners and get to know them and learn from them, you know?
Right. Did you know Kyle Grooms back then?
Kyle had literally, I was almost in the vapor trails of his dust in New York. I just missed Kyle by like probably maybe like a year, maybe 8 months.
Okay.
But Kyle's always been the homie, yeah. So I think I don't know where Kyle is now, but I think he's back in Jersey.
Like New York. He did the show. He did my show like a couple years ago, and he was in Jersey,
right?
Like across the lake, across the river, in Jersey.
Okay.
He's like, I live in Jersey too, so he's like maybe 20, 25 minutes away from me.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, so that happened, and then long story short, I guess somebody from Comedy Central saw me opening up down in Miami and take me to do Live at Gotham. So when it's in New York, Live at Gotham was kind of their showcase show. Mm-hmm. I think Premium Blend had just gotten canceled, so then Live at Gotham was a new show. So I did that, and then from Live at Gotham, I got lucky enough that I did a bunch of TV. Comedy Central has been really good to me. And you know, from there, I moved to New York. I lived in New York for about 4.5 years. And from New York, I got a job writing on Shaquille O'Neal's TV show out here in L.A. It was called Upload. It only did 2 seasons, but it was enough to get me out here to L.A., and I've stayed out here ever since.
Okay. So what is it? What was it like for you coming up? Like, do you notice any differences? Like, because it seems like each generation, it's just something has been augmented. Have you noticed that? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know if I'm explaining it right.
No, I think the generation of comics that came up behind me had not the advantage, that's not the right word, were obviously technology helped. I think that when I was coming up, I feel like we were kind of carving our own path because there wasn't like the internet that you could go to say like that said, what are the steps that somebody would take to be a stand-up comic? Mm-hmm. You know, like I remember going to Barnes and Noble and like trying to buy books, yeah, like stand-up 101 and things like, you know, but there was no path where you could A, find out how to be a comic, B, find out where open mics were, C, find out where like things like what is a hack, and D, like just like talking to other comics, like being able to listen to comics that are good at what they do on their podcast. Like you could be a young comic and be like, oh, well, I like the way this guy thinks, or I like the way that guy thinks. And you know, as long as you can fight against being too heavily influenced by somebody that you like a great deal, mm-hmm, I think having access to, you know, because I came from Florida, which is, I mean, I'm not hating on anybody specifically. I mean, but Florida was full of, when I came up, was full of a lot of hack comedians. Like, really, it was just a thing. It's not, kind of washed up Bodak kind of guys. And I knew that wasn't the kind of stand-up I wanted to do, but I didn't know what other kind of stand-up there was, if that makes any sense. You know, like, I ended up working on a cruise ship for a year.
What is that, you know, like? What is it? Because I know I've heard stories. I heard, like, oh, he's been on the boat too long. You could hear a guy get off stage, oh, that guy's been on the boat too long, or this is... Did you notice that, or was it something that?
Yeah, that's why I got off, because I was just like, you can feel it.
Okay.
You can feel yourself getting hacky, and just because the boat is this weird fantasy where for the 3 or 4 days of the boat, you are as famous as any comic on the planet, because you're the only comic on. I mean, I'm talking about like literally, like you can't walk around, dogs, without being, oh my God, it's a comedian. Take a picture with us, and you know, me and my husband, it's our birthday, and oh my God, you're so funny. Mm-hmm. But you know what happens when you get off that boat? They're like, they look at you no different than the ice sculpture or the buffet. You know,
yeah,
you were just a part of their experience. They're not going to be real fans, because that's not a real thing. That's an excursion that they took. They're getting back to their real lives, and their real life does not include Chris, what's his name, from the boat.
Yeah.
Oh, I liked it. What's his face? The dude with the thing. He talked about his mom. That's as much as you're going to get.
Yeah.
You know, because they had a passive experience and going to see you. All they had to do was put pants on and walk down from their room. They didn't have to say, oh, Chris is playing at Stand Up New York tonight. Maybe I know it's cold, put your shit on. Let's get a couple of drinks. Let's have one in the house, and we'll go out. We'll go to that Mediterranean place, and then we'll go see Chris, and then my boy's DJing around the corner. Like, that's a different experience.
Yeah.
Than somebody just going like, I'm not seasick anymore. Let's go see the comic. You know,
mm-hmm,
it's a different experience, and I, you know, I think because of that, you know, your act starts to become, you know, if you want to keep your job, you better keep those motherfuckers laughing, and so you make jokes that would never go over anywhere but probably on a cruise ship. Hey, what's up? Don't eat at the buffet unless you want to round, round, round. You know, who went to Jamaica today? Don't do that unless you're ready to smoke some ganja. Hello, you know. And it's just jokes where you just don't, you know, you just, and then you get to New York and you see these phenoms going up in front of you,
yeah,
or LA, and you're just like, oh shit, I'm not comfortable here. You're Like, your gear, your clothes don't look right, homie. You know what I'm saying? Fashioned and past you. Look, man, think about it realistically. You're in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, homie. Shit is, the world is passing you by quite literally.
Oh, my God.
Out your window, you know? And you come out, man, I got homeboys. They come out, niggas wearing, you know, jeans and white tennis shoes. You're like, what are you doing? You know, it's just, you've been on a boat too long. You've been living boat life. You haven't been in what we consider modern society. And I've seen people, you know, once you get into that world and you're working a boat, you know, I have friends that they would be working, I don't know, 24 days out of the month on a boat.
Wow.
You know, so it's like, where do you really live, homie?
They be cleaning.
Where do you really live?
Do you really get that much bread doing? You get a lot of bread though doing that, right?
I think you used to. I don't know how lucrative it is anymore. Yeah. It's fine. And for, again, not shitting on people, but it's gonna sound like it. I'm not. For the level of act that usually falls into that line of work, mm-hmm. it's the best that they're gonna do. And so, and that's real.
We all have our levels.
We all have our limits. You know, ain't no shame in that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think that there is a point in with every man when he thinks quietly to himself, he's like, yeah, this is, I'm comfortable here. Mm-hmm. Because to be out in New York or to be out in LA is a hustle and it's a grind. And a lot of dudes don't want that, homie, because it's not that fun all the time. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's not.
It's like, just not that great all the time. It's like, do you want to do that? Or you want to go to Grand Cayman and talk to some pretty girls?
Yeah.
You know?
Well, that's
so I think a lot of dudes would be like, I'll take the boot bill.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it gets boring because the first time, bro, just like you see how you perked up when I said it, Grand Cayman, pretty girls, great, but...
Yeah.
That 37th time,
oh, God.
No bueno, dog. And that 87th time, now you ain't even getting off the boat. You just staying in your room, mad.
I think I just want a girl to eat chicken with, and like we go to the movies and we hang out. We do shit together, like in New Jersey.
Who doesn't? That's a beautiful thing. Yeah. Like, and a girl that like really knows how to clean the bone, and just like you don't even have to show her how to. Just like, she calls you out, like, "Hey, man, you gonna finish that or what?" I'm like, "Oh, I love you."
Like, "Oh shit!" Like, "Yeah, man." I think that's the way for me. But I think for me, like, the short term goal is for me is just like, I just want to play the club. I want to play the improvs. Like, I want to play the funny bones. Like, that's so. It's like. Getting there right now. I mean, I could headline, but I'm not selling no tickets. I want to feature.
Right.
I would. That's like, I want to break into that for now and then build my act even more and then try to do an album within the next year. Like, the goal was to do an album, but I know, like, when you're talking, go ahead.
I'm just saying, when you look at somebody like Roy Wood, who again waited a long time, but look at his fucking hour he just put out. It's one of the best hours that's been put out in 10 years.
Yep.
So it's like, you wait and you wait, and eventually it becomes undeniable. Mm-hmm. And when you get your shot, everybody's like, who is this dude? Everybody that does comedy's like, yeah, that's Roy. That's been happening, dog. Where you been?
Yeah.
You know? No one fell out of their chair like, can you believe Roy's like, yep, sure can.
Sure can,
homie.
It was destined. Like, I felt like... I just felt like that was just like a crowning moment. Like, that's just like, I was like, God damn, like, just wire to wire. What was cool as
fuck? That's what it should have been called.
Through the wire. What I thought about his special, what I thought was just cool on a technical level, how he started with the joke. He acknowledged the crowd, but he didn't acknowledge it. And maybe like 5 or 6 minutes in, he's like, what's up, Atlanta? I was like, God damn. That's like what a cool, that's what a musician does. Like, you know, like how they come out and they're playing the song and they're rocking out and then they're just like, what's up, Atlanta, or whatever, you know?
Right.
I
mean? Yeah.
I just thought that was cool. Right. I don't think I had ever seen anything like that before. Just on that.
I thought that was really cool.
That was like a smooth.
So, I mean,
it was a smooth touch to me.
Yeah, well done, Roy. We got love for you, boy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Because when you're talking about the grind, I was complaining to myself, like, I have a show, because I have a day job, and I want to talk to you about that, too. I have a day job where I get up at, like, 4:50 in the morning and go to work from, like, 7 to 3, and I got a show tomorrow night at 10:30, and I'm like, fuck, why did I agree to do this show? I was like, oh, remember the times where you weren't getting booked and you would do anything to get on I wouldn't do anything, but you would want to be on these shows. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess, fuck, I'll be tired the next day. Who cares? You know? It's one of those for the love of the game sets, you know?
But definitely, homie.
Do you ever feel like that, like, now? Or do you, I mean, like, were you just like...
Yeah, man, I'm old. You know what I'm saying? I don't feel like going. Yeah. You know? Yeah. I'd rather sit and run around, you know, sit and watch my kids run around. But, bro, I'm telling you, man, I still love... Once I get there, I'm fine.
Yeah.
And I love... I still get nervous no matter what the show is.
Yeah.
I still get nervous, and I love it.
How is it... So what was it like for you? Like, how long have you been with your wife? Like, you're doing the cruise ships, you're doing the road. When did you meet your wife, and how did that change you? Like
we met right before I really got the cruise ship gig, which is super tough because it's like, to put that on some news, it was like, we got married and I think I got on the boat the next day. Like, literally, not for traumatic effects for the story. Like, literally got on the boat the next day. And that affects you, man. It affects, you know, you guys getting to know each other. And I mean, it definitely took us years to recover from that, for sure.
Mm-hmm. And
but I mean, it's just like, you have to be a certain kind of person to be an entertainer's wife. Because it's just, you know, it's a grind. It's tough. It's tough on both of you guys.
Yeah, because I always admire, like, when I was doing heavily doing theater, I always appreciated or admired the guys that were married, or they had kids, or their wife was an actor also. So it's just what does your wife do?
She works. She's an administrative assistant. I mean, she's... Not to be all depressing, we're separated now.
Oh, I'm
but
sorry.
You know, we, dude, it's fine. I mean, it's a thing, dude. No one is absolved from being on this planet and going through the ups and downs of relationships, and you know, not everything is meant to last forever. We still best friends. We just ain't married nowhere, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, we did 10 years, which is an incredible run, and I would hope she would say the same thing, like, no regrets, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I think I encourage everybody to not look at anything that doesn't last forever as a failure. I absolutely don't. You know, for me, I learned a lot being married. I learned a lot about myself. That was really my entire 30s. I was married, you know, and I don't know. I definitely would not be the same person had I not had that experience. And I mean, you know, it's all about, I mean, she's a gangster for being with me, because I'm a wild boy.
do you have it, like, with your kids? Like, are they, how old are your kids?
I have three kids. My kids are 10, 8.5, and 3. So, I mean, they, you know, I'm with them most of the day. I'm actually about to hop off with you and run and go pick my boy up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the joy of my life is my children, you know, and kind of everything after that is everything after that, man. And if once you have a way to frame your life, like, no matter what happens, man, you know, I got my little guys and I'm proud of how I've raised them, you know, it's everything else kind of falls into place, man.
That's great, man. I'm trying to think if there was, so you have to get off in a couple minutes though, don't you?
I got to run, but that's, you know, I'm always around. I love to talk, bro. I don't want this to be a one and done, man.
No, well, I'll definitely have to have you back on, because there's I think we just cracked the surface with the comedy stuff. But you might be someone that I bug about show business shit, like
Yes, that's what I do. I just love talking about it. I absolutely love it, man.
Yeah.
But yes, please do.
Like on some off mic shit. Like, what do you do when this happens? What do you do when XYZ comes?
Man, I would love to. You ain't saying nothing but the thing, brother. I would love to do that.
Okay, well, we'll make that happen. We'll make it happen. So where can people find you? What do you have? This show, this will go up in a couple days. This will go up probably this weekend, Saturday or Sunday. You got shows coming up like this. To plug some shit.
I'll be headlining the Denver Improv at the end of this month, March 30th through the 2nd.
Okay.
But until then, you can catch me. I will be, I'm always active on social media, on Twitter, at Al Jackson. On Instagram at Al Jackson IG.
All right. Al, thank you so much for doing this, man. Thank you for the time. I really appreciate it, man.
Dude, ain't no thing, brother. Anytime.
All right. Appreciate you, man.
All right, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. Peace.
All right.